Communism in Germany, Part 8, The Armed Rising, Part 2. Neuberg, whom we have already quoted several times, rightly maintains that the armed rising does not begin with street fighting, but with the period of immediate preparation for the general attack. Quote, "One must remember that in the widest sense of the word, the rising does not begin with the attack of the fighting organizations of the proletariat, but rather some days, even weeks before. It begins when the time for the general attack has been fixed, and when the party is working at feverish speed to win over the troops, to arm the proletariat and the semi-proletarian elements for the decisive struggle for power. It begins when the masses take up the fight of their own initiative against the forces of the counter-revolution." Close quote. In this sense, Germany was, since the middle of December 1932, in the period of the communist rising. Therewith, the necessity arose, the indisputable necessity, according to Neuberg, for the Communist Party to create its own proletarian armed forces. According to Lenin's theory of revolution, the organ of the rising must be the Red Guard as armed mass organization of the proletariat. At the moment when the party takes over, the immediate preparations for the seizure of power, such a mass fighting organization, must be created. This moment occurred for the KPD in the last half of 1932, and so it began to organize the Red Guard as the Red Mass Self-Defense. According to communist reports, they had succeeded in 1923 in organizing about 250,000 Red Guards, men into proletarian hundreds, in the course of a few months. One hoped now for the same result. In connection with the anti-fascist action and the tactics of the Red United Front with the non-party Social Democratic Workmen, the Anti-Fascist Fighting League was feverishly developed as a half-military, half-propagandist fighting organization. The peculiar conditions of street fighting, from the technical military point of view, brought it about that, besides such mass organizations, special terrorist groups varying in strength from 10 to 200 men were formed, partly of party members, to carry out special tasks in the intricate battlefield of towns. The leader's staff of all such communist fighting organizations had not only to be militarily trained, but also politically trained and reliable. In accordance with the theory of civil war, these leaders should, as far as possible, be taken from the illegal German Red Front Fighters League. Contrary to the usual conception, the Red Fighters League was not so much a military as a political nucleus, not the organ of direct fighting, but an elite organism. And, quote, "at the same time, the representatives of the idea of civil war and a strong means of propaganda for this idea in the working class as a whole," close quote. Altogether, the following scheme of organization for the period of armed rising emerged. The Red Front Fighters League was to be the central nucleus of the KPD and leaders' unit for the other fighting organizations. The Anti-Fascist Fighting League was to win over and train the broader masses of the people for the fight against fascism. The Red Masses Self-Defense was to be an immediate mass fighting organization, and finally, as military backbone and sharpest weapon of revolt, the numerous terrorist groups with their purely military tasks. As is well known, the Red Front Fighters League was forbidden after the disorders of the 1st of May 1929, when its membership, according to Neuberg, was about 100,000. from many sources of information, trials, actions, and publications of an illegal nature, it is clear that the RFB continued to exist illegally with an unknown membership. It organized leaders' meetings, military training courses, and went in for defensive sport. It supplied the men for the AM organizations and the OSNA, and worked intensively to subvert army and police. For instance, in the Altona district, in January 1933, a subversive pamphlet was found with the heading Red Front and the badge of the RFB, in which the police were called upon to disobey orders. Also, in different places in Saxony, January and February 1933, RFB leaflets and placards were distributed, in which police and army were called upon to ally themselves with the RFB. A special edition of the Red Front may be taken as an example. It begins with the words, "Mobilization, the Red Front League calls you." That is quite in harmony with Neuberg's directions, according to which, quote, "In this period, which begins with the approach of the general battle, in the period of preparation for the attack on the state, the party must concentrate its attention on the task of subverting and winning over the troops," close quote. And this alone makes it possible to convert imperialistic war into civil war. The more the general situation, in the opinion of the KPD, changed to an immediate revolutionary situation, the stronger was the emphasis on purely military training. In the winter of 1932-33, the political training of the RFB members was accordingly second to military training. The members were trained particularly in defensive sport and in the use and theory of arms. Particular emphasis was laid on the blocking of streets, the raising of barricades, on shooting and throwing hand grenades. According to the already quoted works of Neuberg, Langer, etc., the future leaders of the army for the Red Rising were trained in the strategy and tactics of civil war before, during and after the Rising itself. The training was carried out in accordance with special schemes for a rising, which were published by the management of the RFB in the middle of December 1932. The leaders themselves say about these schemes, quote, "These schemes must be the basis for the ideological work of our groups of five, of the political university of our organizations. They must be the main theoretical weapons in all the 545 groups of the nucleus organizations and training squads, as well as in the reserve formations, in the courses which, under conspiratorial conditions, are organized in the factories by our shock troops." Our presentation follows closely Neuberg's Der Waffen Aufstand and articles in October, so that the lack of these books is no longer of importance. It is at the same time your task is to communicate to us any experience you acquire in your training work and to mention any defects or mistakes in our schemes. Continue the training of those comrades who show a keen interest through further special courses. Make them propagandists and agitators for our army of freedom. It is absolutely necessary that all revolutionary parties who are preparing to secure the political power should ponder the lessons of the proletarian rising in Rival on the 1st of December 1924, close quote. The instructions usually took place in the so-called training squads, which were built up according to the principle laid down by the leaders of the RFB in September 1932. According to these principles, the training squad consists of all newly joined members of a stormtroop district and is divided into groups of five. The period of training is 2 months. From now on, The fourth squad of every stormtroop must be a training squad. Regulations as to commands and orders and other details of organisation were distributed in the so-called Verpolitische Schriftenreihe, number 2 and number 3, a new edition of the booklet Proletarian War Sport Commando. In the instructions of the RFB, Y Defensive Sport, the following exercises are ordered: physical drill, sports, boxing, shooting, cross-country marching, field exercises, calculation of distance, practice in holding demonstrations, map reading, finding one's way by compass and stars, Morse code, jiu-jitsu. With what thoroughness military training was carried through, we can see from the rules as to auxiliary trench mortars in the armed rising. Quote, in the armed rising, enemy strong points, example barracks and railway stations, will have to be taken by force. Instead of artillery, trench mortars or large caliber iron tubes will be used. The two types of auxiliary bomb throwers, viz. The trench mortars and the mortar in the shape of a large caliber iron tube, are therefore to a high degree suited to hasten or to render possible the conquest of fortified points. The moral effect of such mines filled with high explosives is so great that an enemy who is politically not heterogeneous will probably surrender after a few heavy mines have exploded. In addition to that, one must consider the extraordinarily strong destructive effect of heavy mines within a narrow complex of buildings. Close quote. In connection with the theoretical training, there was practical military drill, which took place under the greatest secrecy. Such manoeuvres of the Red Army did not always pass off as the future Red generals and instructors would wish, as the following example from 15th and 16th October 1932 shows. Quote, the White Detachment consisted of the groups from Stuttgart, Esslingen, Karnstadt, Backman, Plockingen and Mettingen. Its strength was 100 to 110 men. The Red Detachment consisted of the groups from Ludwigsburg, Fauerbach, Zaffenhausen, Ellingen and Wellendorf, and was about 90 strong. On each side there were further as runners, 3 motorcyclists and 9 to 10 ordinary cyclists. The Red Detachment collected on the 15th of October at 9 o'clock, under great secrecy on the common, and marched from there in columns to Untertürkheim, Mettingen, Brühl, in the direction of Dieskau, and then along the road to Denkendorf, to a spot northwest of this road, and about 1.25 kilometres south of the crossroads, Esslingen-Dieskau. Esslingen-Denkendorf. There a camp was set up near Friedrichsmuhl. Here the detachment arrived at about 1 o'clock at night and immediately retired to rest. Through the towns and villages marching was in loose order. At 3 o'clock the alarm was sounded and the whole detachment was drawn up on the road between Dieskau and Denkendorf. The division into groups and sections followed. The 4 sections were formed into 2 fighting lines, which kept at a distance of 400 to 500 metres from each other. The position and the objective were as follows. The enemy has occupied hill number 326 in the Lauer Holz, about 3 kilometres south of Zell. Red has first to discover, by means of patrols, the position and strength of the enemy outposts and the position of the enemy. Rifle fire will be indicated by the clapping of hands and the flashing of electric torches, and machine gun fire by rattles. Since up to 8 o'clock in the morning, no contact with the enemy had been found, the manoeuvres were suspended, and the detachment marched back to the camp in the wood near Beckheim in loose order. There, tea was made, a rest was taken, sporting exercises were carried out, and at 11:30 a.m. lunch was provided. Towards 2 o'clock, the various local groups marched home in loose order. The discipline of the majority of those who took part was extremely bad, as the exercises gradually took up more and more time. The orders of the leaders were only reluctantly obeyed, and in some cases not obeyed at all. The field training must be considered as very poor, and the leaders especially, being for the most part young and unknown, seemed quite ignorant of military operations. The high command was held by an unknown youth of 23 to 24, about 5'6" in height, with blonde hair and a haggard face. The manoeuvres must be considered as a failure. As appeared afterwards, the Reds never occupied Hill No. 326, against which the Whites had advanced, but held Hill 344.8, about 1,300 metres south of Dreishan. Hill No. 344.8 lies about 2 kilometres southwest of Hill No. 326. Close quote.
You're tuned in to Radio Stormer on the DailyStormer.com.
The soldiers of the Red Front must separate themselves from the German community and submit unconditionally to the Communist International. Proof of this is the Red Military Oath of the RFB, which we shall quote here. We, class-conscious proletarians, swear to use all our strength in the fight for the freeing of the workers from capitalist exploitation, oppression, and persecution. In iron discipline and with the strictest obedience, we submit to all orders and regulations which may be necessary in the fight for the interests of the proletariat. He who is unfaithful to the Red Front or betrays the interests of the proletariat will suffer the deepest contempt of the working class and the most severe sentence of revolutionary justice. On the 15th of January 1933, there was a great recruiting drive to build up a youth storm troop. The young workmen were to be quickly mobilised and systematically trained for the armed rising. After the party organisations had turned illegal, the groups of 8 were transformed into groups of 5. A circular letter from the League management to all district leaders, which was sent round on February the 25th, 1933, by courier, explains the significance of this basic fighting unit of the RFB. Quote, "It must be clear to every leader that in this sense the group is the decisive formation. All work must be carried out with the help of the group. The greatest initiative and the greatest responsibilities lie with the group leader. A very efficient intelligence and alarm service must be organised from group to group and within the group itself. This must make it possible to bring the group into action at any time of the day or night. Through its individual members, the group itself must be able to join up and mobilise with the other masses and organisations of workers. This organisation, combined with firm determination on the part of our staff and leaders, will enable us to prove in the coming weeks that our enemies cannot destroy us and that we are in a position to deal them the decisive blow." Close quote. A decisive turn in the work of the organisation of the RFB was noticeable at the end of February 1933, since it was now thought that the critical hour had arrived. The RFB had to show that it was equal to the task of leading the other mass fighting organisations. For the second half of February, the Red Mass Self-Defence was placed under the leadership of the RFB, and thus was formed a well-prepared mass organisation, politically and militarily reliable in its leadership. the street battle could begin. Already, at the beginning of December 1932, the leaders of the RFB had recognised that the decisive hour was rapidly approaching. They called a secret conference of the entire Reich organisations at Brunswick, which was held so secretly and with such precautions that not until some weeks later, when the resolutions and directions of this conference were passed on to the lower grades of the RFB, did the officials of the state realise that it had been held. This Reich conference issued a call to the German working class, in which the general staff of the Socialist Army of Freedom urged the Red Fighters to remain in a state of intense preparedness and called upon to prepare for the political general strike as the first stage of the armed rising. Quote, workers in armament factories, railway and transport workers, proletarians in mines, factories and farms, policemen and soldiers, unite all the offensive and defensive elements of the working people in the defensive revolutionary battle of the masses against the fascist general dictatorship. Close quote. This last appeal for armed revolt derives its terms and plans from a detailed resolution of the Reich Conference, in which the following passage occurs. Quote, the RFB must play a leading part in all aspects of the daily class war. The RFB must grow to an even greater mass organisation. It must become the organisation of all proletarians fit for defensive action, forward to the fulfilment of the 3 months plan, i.e. till the end of February 1933, forward in the fight for the dictatorship of the proletariat. Close quote. The resolution lays down further that the lower units for particular tasks should take the leadership into their own hands in the practical fight against sentences of the courts, against forced sales in strikes and demonstrations, etc. In a political speech, Comrade Paul declared that the Red Fighters must lead the fight for a free socialist fatherland. Quote, the 12th session of the EEKI proclaimed that a period of new wars is at hand. We are therefore faced with the question of intensifying work among the masses, above all among the SA, Reichsbanner, Stahlhelm, Reichswehr and police. We must also intensify our efforts among the railway workers, the workers in industries vital in war, and among the unemployed. We can prove scientifically that there is no other way out of the crisis but that of revolution. We are for defensive preparations for the fight for socialism. Better and more vigorously than before, we must popularize our dead leaders, the heroes of the revolution. We must work up such a mood among the workers that they grasp the idea that the rifles must be in the workers' hands. Only the proletarian revolution can defeat capitalism and overcome war and the danger of war. Close quote. In the speech dealing with the work of organisation, it is stated, among other things, that the illegal central periodical of the RFB must in future appear in an edition of 300,000, and that on the anniversary of the Russian Red Army, on the 23rd of February 1933, the RFB would transfer 10,000 functionaries as a gift to the KPD. In the speech, the following paragraph occurs. Quote, there must be greater cooperation. We have addressed a circular letter with four questions to all districts. The answers to this letter have been received from 22 districts. 17 telegrams of greeting to the Red Army were sent off. We have received 20 telegrams expressing confidence in the League management. All that shows solidarity between the central organisation and the district leaders. We stand now before the great offensive. This must thunder like a storm through Germany. We must be the best helpers of the party in the fight against the Versailles Treaty in the industrial struggle. Close quote. The close solidarity of the RFB with the Red Army of Soviet Russia is strikingly proved by these extracts. The gift of 10,000 officials shows in the same way as the circulation of the periodical, its organ, that the RFB was organising revolution in a grand style. If one adds to this a resolution of the Reich Conference, the circular issued by the Württemberg district of the RFB, which begins with the words, "Red soldiers of freedom, join up in the fulfilment of the 3 months' storm plan," then it becomes quite clear that the RFB was the most important factor in the immediate preparations for revolution in Germany, and that it had succeeded, in spite of it being forbidden, in becoming the best organised fighting troop of the Civil War. The directions of the Württemberg district dealing with the political and organisational tasks which the RFB, in accordance with the resolution of the Reich Conference, had to fulfil, are imbued with the most violent radicalism. They show that the organisational and propaganda work of the Red Soldiers of Freedom is aimed at the political and technical arming of the proletariat for civil war, the most suitable way of arming the civil war troops of the KPD for the final battle lies in anti-militarist work among soldiers, policemen, railway guards, and in the bourgeois defensive organisations. In the preparing of the revolution in the factories, particularly in the vital ones and the ones important in war, in getting hold of youth, in physical training and the study of defensive technique, and in training for military purposes under the newest revolutionary instructions. The Secret District Conference of the RFB of Hesse, Frankfurt, on the 17th and 18th of December 1932, which took place in connection with the Reich Conference, issued a similar appeal. Quote, "Every proletarian who is capable of defending himself and has the fighting spirit should be in our ranks. Get him for us forward to the attack. There can be no peace or tranquility until the red flag of the freedom of the peoples flies over us who are the Red Army of a free socialist Soviet Germany."